Are you looking to sell your property without all the usual headaches associated with traditional property sales? Maybe you're looking for a straightforward, hassle-free, quick sale. We've got you covered at G67 Home Buyers. Ditch the stress of endless viewings, the waiting game with property chains, and the buyers missing deadlines. No matter the condition or location of your property, we're ready to buy. And guess what? We'll give you an instant cash offer, no traditional hoops to jump through.
We get it. Sometimes you just need to sell fast. And we're here to make that happen. We'll often be able to buy in just a few days. You no longer need to worry about the sale falling through after weeks or months. We have buyers ready now.
We handle everything for you, even paying your legal fees, and there is no hidden fees or estate agent commissions to pay. Just a smooth, easy sale with us by your side, helping you every step of the way. I am David Smith, and I will personally help you find a hassle-free solution to selling your property fast, beginning with a free, no-obligation cash offer for your property. Remember, I am here to help, so get in touch in the link below and let's chat.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to a brand new episode of Social Sessions, where we dive deep into the world of electronic music and the extraordinary individuals who have left an indelible mark on the scene. Today we are privileged to have a true legend of the turntables and a pioneer in Scotland's electronic music landscape. He's a DJ, a producer and a cultural icon whose beats have fueled dance floors for decades. Join us as we embark on a sonic journey and get to know the one and only John Mancini, whose beats have not only made us dance, but have also defined a generation of music lovers. So, welcome to Social Sessions, John. How you doing? All good?
Well, better than the man here beside you.
So,
yeah, all good, mate. All good.
So, obviously, we're going to go into kind of different things, dance music and all that, all your kind of history and stuff, but I'll just take you back to your own kind of childhood and growing up. So where did you grow up, John?
So I grew up in a small mining village. It's called Fultus.
Oh, I know Fultus, aye.
Everybody talks about it, but it's a great wee place.
Aye.
It's a great place. But it's a shithole.
Aye.
But it's full of good people.
Aye.
Look, well, there's some real wankers in there.
Aye.
But it's
get them everywhere.
It's full of good people.
Aye.
Very talented village. There's people like, well, say Lewis Capaldi's half of Fultus.
Oh, I see.
Lewis is just down the road, but he played in a lot of clubs up there. And he learned a lot of things, but he's also, his best friend is a wee guy called Connor Larkman,
right,
who's LF System. He had the LF System,
aye,
another
aye.
One. So I know they, Sean and Connor as
aye.
Well, there's also a guy called Adam Warrington,
aye,
who is the guitarist with Youngblood. You had the Youngblood?
I know Youngblood, aye.
And then you've got the fabulous Paige Turley. So the Paige is their pal. Paige,
oh, that's,
Paige won Love
aye,
Island.
That's right, aye.
And there's a few others. There'll be Jack Aitchison who plays. He's the youngest player ever to play and score for Celtic.
Aye.
And then there's your truly, if you want to include me in that. There's loads of talent. There's sun in the water up there. There's loads of talent.
So when you were growing up, John, what was it? What kind of took you into the kind of, were you always kind of attracted to dance music? Because obviously you'd have grew up with the kind of 80s and stuff. Eh? Like,
so I've always a music fan. First and foremost, always music. Collected records for a young age. Very first record I bought was ABBA, Money, Money, Money.
Aye.
I bought it for six bonbons off my brother. And then it would be, it's late 70s, just buying singles, and 80s, and it was always buying 12-inch records, always
aye.
Veering on the dance sort of stuff. Went through the hip-hop stage, buying a lot of hip-hop, electro. I was a rocker as well at one point.
Right,
I liked the AC/DC and Iron Maiden.
Just a kind of lover of music.
That's light music. That's it. I just like music. It's, yeah. You can tell with DJs who love music and they're no in it for instance, nowadays it's image over music. We all look at it.
I know.
So I'm sure we'll cover that.
Aye.
But that's, you can tell a DJ who was in it for the music, they weren't in it for any fame or money. Because there wasn't any money in DJing at one point. There wasn't any money in DJing. So
it's totally different now.
It's
obviously you've got there's been a switch in there for the kind of vinyl kind of, and that a lot of DJs would say that like there's no real DJing with the electrical stuff, and obviously it's an art in any form, but what do you think of that kind of?
So the format argument has rumbled on for years, and I have no issues with moving on with technology. There's new technology, CDJ 3000s and the new mixers and all that are phenomenal,
mm-hmm.
and it's great, and it's so much better on the back carrying a USB than 200 records.
No, I can imagine.
Which would kill you. Used to have marks on my shoulder and stuff, with bruise marks with carrying. And then travelling abroad was really difficult because you had to really select carefully what you were taking. whereas you just shove everything on a USB and you're away. There was a recent thing with DJ Pierre who done a thing about DJs who learned on vinyl. And I've seen a lot of people going, oh, he thinks he's great because he plays vinyl and wear this and wear that. And that was nothing to do with it. I think it was more the case of, it wasn't our school of DJing was a real hard school, harder school than what it is now. And I'm no knocking anybody that's learning now. That's not the case. But you can fake it very easy now.
Mm-hmm.
And you couldn't fake it then.
Aye.
You had to work hard. You had to collect the best, or the work hard to find the right tracks because they were limited.
Mm-hmm.
You had to blag a lot. You had to find. You had to spend a lot of money. But you also had to work hard on your craft.
Aye.
Because you had to learn how to mix properly under different conditions and find the records and can line them up. It wasn't the same as flicking through and pressing and all that. It didn't have all that stuff. So you learned in a different way. You learned in a harder way, which me, I thought it was a better school, that for word. It was a better school of learning. You did had to work harder. And if you were shit, you were found it.
Aye.
You could not fake it. You couldn't look good or who you were. You couldn't fake it. You couldn't put mixes on. It didn't work like that.
Aye.
It was vinyl was a different learning curve. And I believe everybody should try and learn a bit of vinyl and try and understand the art of DJing, because that was came through as
started kind of hip hoppy, didn't it? Was it kind of,
well, vinyl's always been there for a while, but it would probably be starting with the scratching with the ghetto parties and the street parties and New York and stuff, and then it would be obviously the warehouse and the acid house, and that's obviously that's where it stemmed from, the house scene. But that was where the vinyl came from, and as I said, it was a different learning time, and you got found out very quickly.
I think obviously you know my cousin Brian, and Brian tried a few times. I know how you do, Brian. But Brian tried to teach me a few times, and it was really hard. And I remember I had a wee kind of DJ, at that time they were rubbish, but it was like a wee online kind of DJ thing. I can't remember what it was, but Brian, I showed Brian a virtual DJ or something it was called, and it was dead easy. Like, you could do it dead easy. Brian was like, I showed him it and he was like, I don't really understand that. And it was this is before I was even in prison, John, so I'm talking 2004-05. But I could not do it, do you know what I mean? And Brian made it look so easy. So I can imagine, obviously you'll be the same, but it was an art. It definitely was an art form.
Yeah, you really did have to work hard, and you had to love it. You had to love what you'd done. Said it, that's totally different. It was totally different. Don't get me wrong, this the philosophy still there is pick the right tunes in the right order and play them at the right time.
Aye.
It still stands. It doesn't matter what the format is.
No.
But it does make it a hell of a lot easier. And there is an easier inroads into the scene.
Aye.
For a lot of people who are in it, for me, for the wrong reasons. Aye. I think you have to be in it for music. I see so many people who just... Listen, everybody's a DJ now. Every person is a DJ. Everybody, all these celebrities come along and say, oh, it's a DJ set. DJ set. You're like, fuck off.
No.
And it's really quite frustrating in that front. Whereas the scene is slightly being stolen by people who are in it for the wrong reason. And the scene's changed vastly.
I'll take you, obviously, I'm going to go right back, John, right to the kind of rave scene, right, and like Hangar 13, Metro, and that. And again, Brian was the one that kind of told me all that, and I just always wish I had experienced it.
See, being a kid,
aye,
in 1988-89, when life was pretty shit,
aye,
you had the Thatcher years, you had all that stuff, you had the miners' strikes and stuff, and then this acid house thing came along, and this new youth culture movement, and it grabbed every kid. In the space of probably six months, 8 months, it just exploded. And going to these gigs with carefree, not giving a fuck about anything that was going on, working Monday to Friday in shit jobs, and you got to the weekend, and it was fucking, you were going to these things that were blowing your mind.
Aye.
They were blowing your mind. Like, for instance, the first big raves would be like Dirt Box, and it'd be Slam in the Park, and it'd be Revolution and all these things, which was at the Plaza.
Aye.
Yeah. And then obviously the street rave thing started down in there in 89, September 12th, 1989. and we went down in a bus for where we locals, all these local kids, two buses away down, fucking charge. We were leaving at 12 on a Sunday morning because it started at 2 in the afternoon. It was actually a Sunday afternoon.
Was it?
People talk about all these daytime clubs that are popping up.
Aye.
Street Rave was based on a Sunday afternoon. That's when it started. 2 till 2, and you had 1,600, 1,700 kids in this old dance hall, this ballroom, giving it fucking large to acid house music, strobes and smoke, and giving it. It was. Don't get me wrong.
Aye.
Drugs played a big part in what was happening then, right? And everybody was in the same wavelength.
Mm-hmm.
They were all just, everybody joined in with these DJs who you trusted the DJ. The dance floor experience that I remember then was second to none.
So what was the DJs that were playing at that time?
It was a lot of, well, Graham Park, Mike Pickering were the first two guests. And you would have but Boney was resident then. I wasn't resident, we straight right at the very start. Boney with Bob Jeffries, with Scott Gibson. And they had some MC Duke, and it went on to the stuff like Bass Heads, Utah Saints.
Ultrasonic,
Ultrasonic never really, they would, Ultrasonic would come later.
Right.
At the original start, it was Ultrasonic would, I think they had Ultrasonic at, we'd never played, they would play a hanger.
Right.
So Street Rave was there 89 to 93.
That's crazy. 89 was long as that's the weird
thing. It was such a good time to be a kid. Probably 45. To be a kid in that environment and be something that came along. And we took it as, it was like a religion to us.
Because I don't know if have you ever seen the film Beats?
You have.
Is that close? Is that kind of close to you?
Yeah, it's the same sort of coming of age thing that, similarities.
Aye.
It's the similarities basically with everybody that was working in a factory or something, or do you know what I mean? And then you went out and party at the weekend, and it was crazy that what was going on, because you went for the 80s, which was Flicks and Breaking, getting all these big discos and stuff, and they were good discos. Aye. There's a prime example of the way it changed when the Hitman and Her went to. Do you know Hitman and Her?
No.
So Hitman and Her was a programme in Channel 4. I think it was Channel 4. And it was on at 2 o'clock in the morning, 1, 2. Aye. And it was Pete Waterman and Michaela Strachan who went to these clubs. And they had all these people dancing at the clubs. But then they went to the Hacienda one night.
Right.
And the Hitman and Her, that Pete Waterman, could not understand the fucking thing, what was going on. They didn't get it.
Aye.
And it's quite iconic in the acid house scene. Aye. And they're going, we have no idea what's going on. And the whole place is fucking giving it big licks and all that stuff. And Graham Park, Mike Pickering, the residents, they're there. And it's just a thing. You go, that's how different it is for there. So we were quite happy that they did not understand it, because we seen ourselves, who were different in that scene, as different.
Mm-hmm.
And we went and done our thing. And as I said, it was our secret. It was our thing. It was growing up as a kid, you wanted to be exclusive. Probably. You don't want to be commercial. But it was commercial, as in the fact that all these big dance tracks were in the charts.
Mm-hmm.
From Bass Heads to Rich in Paradise, FPI, Gat Decor, all these things. Frankie Knuckles.
Aye.
Whistle Song, they're on the charts. It's unreal.
Obviously they would have been, but what level were they getting in the charts, John?
Number one.
Did that?
Black Box was number one. I think it was number one.
Was it?
Black Box. Pump Up Pajama, all these tracks. When you look at the charts, they were all top 10.
Aye.
It was the weirdest thing. And we didn't want it to be ground. But being a kid then was pretty special, mate. Was just, I can't describe how as one you were.
Aye.
The dance floor was, obviously, one love, one dance floor. It was pretty special. Don't get me wrong, I don't know if that's just me looking back with Misty Allen as a kid. And
I think MD that grew up, I grew up with Trans, Dave Pierce, kind of like all that kind of stuff.
Which was a great time.
It was a great time, definitely. But I think I still wished I had been, and I don't know if it was just listening to Brian and listening to them, but I just wished I had experienced that era.
So see that era you're talking about, probably 1999, 2001.
Aye, that was a brilliant.
The glory years was fantastic everywhere.
Aye.
Because the Super Club had came along.
Aye.
And what our classes of big, big classics were coming out, and Trance and Stardust, Defected had started, all this stuff. And that was a glorious time to be. the Archies was probably at its peak. I think we peaked as a species as well.
Aye.
At the millennium.
Aye.
I think it's slightly deteriorated in all aspects of life since then.
Mm-hmm.
There's been good bits, but I think we as a, we didn't have social media.
Aye.
The country was in a good place. I think we peaked as a species.
I think when you go back, like obviously I'm going to talk about the Ecstasy, right? Because obviously that was a big thing, and obviously had like Ease Are Good and all that, Ebenezer Are Good and stuff. And it was one of the times where people would still say that drugs were good at that time. And I would never ever like go, oh, drugs are good, and I would never say to anybody to try it. But the experience that people did get was unbelievable. And I think when you look at the way the cocaine scene is now, and it's kind of getting overlooked, and the way they went after the ecstasy scene, it doesn't make sense to me.
Cocaine's ruined the dance scene.
Aye.
Part of it. That and social media, and that the fact that you don't need to go to a club to get your hole now.
Aye.
Right, swipe left, swipe left. Aye. Right, it's all changed. Tinder, the social stuff has just changed. It's all different. And you'll see people who go to clubs, take cocaine or whatever, and they want to go home after 5 minutes and pull the curtains and listen to the grass grow.
It's mental, isn't it?
So it's the most unsociable kind of drug that in the dance. And back then it was just, it was ease that people took. But I think, dare I say it, I think they were better quality, I think.
Aye.
I never done ease.
It wasn't my thing back then.
Didn't they smoke, didn't they drink?
I think you can just see with the levels. Obviously, I've kind of done a lot. I've got kind of postgraduate stuff in substance abuse and all that kind of stuff. And the levels of drugs,
you can tell.
The levels of drugs that you're getting. I mean, I don't even really think the drugs that you're getting in this day and age is MDMA. MDMA comes from a plant, and that plant's pretty rare now. So they've switched it. I think obviously we held it, Mandy. Do you know what I mean? And, so it's a different drug. It's still in a different chemical kind of makeup, but it's a totally different drug. So back then, when you're talking, it would have been pure ecstasy, pure MDMA, which a lot of people don't know this either. In France and stuff like that, if you have got a missus, that MDMA is a legal drug over there. MDMA, they give you small doses, micro doses, with your missus so that you can connect again. Okay. So there is something about connection. Obviously, that's a government that's doing that.
Yeah. You could tell when these were good.
Aye.
In the club.
Aye.
Because you remember, you'd be DJing to people like beer heads and drinking them. And there was a lot of violence.
I know.
Before.
Aye, aye.
Ecstasy came along. And obviously the violence for the soccer hooligans as well. And then this ecstasy came along and changed it.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas you had all these Rangers, Celtic, Hibs, all that in the same place. And then we're all right.
Aye.
We're all cuddling each other.
It's all right. Don't worry
fighting
about
on the Saturday, cuddling on the Sunday.
Aye.
And that was the whole difference. So you could have a room with 5,000 people on this wavelength, and the control and the power you had in your hand with these records was pretty phenomenal.
Feel like a god.
It was just I don't think there was any drugs could make you feel as good as when I'm dropping this tune and it's fucking big piano and the whole, all these hands go up. This is fucking mega.
Unbelievable.
Brilliant. It's just brilliant. All your mates and everybody's on the same wavelength.
Aye.
Out of fucking nut, probably. But everybody's having the greatest time of their life.
Aye.
You've got your kids, your with all your friends, you're listening to this music that's came along, and you're part of this youth culture. And it was fucking incredible times. Aye. It really was. Don't get me wrong, there's some shite times back then as well.
Aye, of course.
But looking at it as a general whole, we were so fortunate to have been there at the start of that scene. Aye. Absolutely fortunate. I feel really privileged to be a part of that.
I think obviously there was a few kind of big high profile overdoses that brought that kind of light, that scene to light. And when you look at overdoses and stuff with ecstasy, 9 times out of 10 it's because you drown yourself.
It's usually there's no disrespect to anybody that unfortunately passed away, but the problem was either overheating or drowning.
Aye.
Drinking too much water, which is the Lea Betts thing, I think. Aye. was too Lea much Betts, water. Aye. Unfortunate. And there was a few unfortunate deaths down at Hangar.
I know.
That was after Street Dave. Absolutely
I know.
Horrible thing to that kid goes out and doesn't come home type thing.
That is the problem with drugs. And I do believe, like, I think obviously, I think you've been to a few kind of recovery events and stuff, John, and you can make that atmosphere there if you if you have the right kind of people and everybody's on the kind of right.
So I've done 10 recovery, maybe more. And the very first one was my mate of mine, Jim Kirtland, who asked me to go and play at this. And I'm going, it's got to be pish.
Aye,
it's
got to be fucking, I know.
So they have that 3-day event. I think it was whatever it was, some Cocaine's Anonymous convention or something. And he asked me to play at it. And it was really strange. They had this big talk, and I actually heard the last of the speaker, and he was so funny.
Aye.
And it's like a big family. They all go, and it's really, really quite odd to see. And then I put the first track on, and they're up and shoulders, and they're fucking swinging for the ceiling. I'm going, Jim, what, they're all or not? He said, no drugs in here.
Aye.
I says, I'm telling you right. I says, they're high on life.
Aye.
And I took my well to get my head around that.
Aye.
And I'm talking the whole dance floor.
Oh, I know, I've seen it. It's amazing.
They go up and they're clapping and they're shouting and going, ah. And I remember playing a remix of Love Is In The Air.
Aye.
And the whole place sung it.
Aye.
Gloriously. It was fucking what a wee moment. And I've done quite a few since. And it's really odd because Jim says to me, so you've got to remember, most of these people haven't seen you straight.
I know.
Because they've all been straight.
And you don't know, they don't remember it. So see, when you go to the recovery events, you can remember it, which is...
I'd advise anybody to go and experience this. It's strange as fuck. It's really strange to see this group of people, I'm talking like 200 or 300 people, having the time. It's like they've had the best ecstasy in the world. But they're no drugs or drink. There's nothing there. They're high on life because they're just happy to be here and happy to be in a better place. Well, most of them, obviously. Aye. And it was pretty strange. Now, I remember I met the guy at there's one in Glasgow in the Pond of the Parks.
Aye, they're doing it.
And me and Michael, me and Kilkey done it, and the guy who I hadn't seen for years, and he told me he'd been through a bad time and he was getting out the other side. And it was great to see. And he goes, see all this here? All these people who have done all this, says, that's your fucking fault. Who the fuck's that? I said, this is your fault. All the tunes, this is you, he's just done that. It was a joke.
It
was funny. So your fault. Thanks very much, mate.
See, obviously there's that argument about gateway drugs and I don't know. Like, I'm not, there's a lot of people I know, I believe that there's trauma and stuff, there's childhood stuff, there's a lot of stuff goes on that makes you go into addiction. It's not just that you used ecstasy and that. There's a lot of people that done that and never went on to kind of be an addict, do you know what I mean? So there's a lot, it's very complex issue, but just, it is amazing. And as you said, I would tell him that you go and experience a recovery, because you don't believe it till you see it, like how good it is.
It was wild, man. It was
we actually had Bez at the last. Bez was at the last one, and the place was bouncing.
Is he in recovery?
Aye. He's actually went into recovery. Aye.
We're fucking dying.
I know. But aye, so he was doing it. It was brilliant, John. So it was. So I'm going to just take you into kind of like your own kind of work and your own kind of experiences, Where was your kind of big, your first kind of big gig? When was your first?
Street rave. I'd done some local stuff, and the local stuff was great.
Aye.
Because I was in a place called Whitburn.
Aye, I know Whitburn.
Rumours. It was a pub up the stair. That was where I got my first residency sort of thing. I'd done a couple of acid house parties, if you want to call it that, local, just with mates and stuff. And so we were pretty clued up, to be fair, on what was going on and the tunes we were buying and that, and it was all, everything was underground, and 23rd Precinct was The Haunt, where you went and got your vinyl. Religiously went there for
years.
15 years, every Saturday morning. Spent
£100. Is that the one in the tune that you kind of go, you're doing the stairs?
I think it's an Odd Bins or something. It's a wine place.
Aye,
it's right across from the Blue Lagoon at Bath Street.
Aye.
Billy Kilty owned that. That was a haunt for, it was just part of the 90s, part of the late 80s, 90s, Glasgow, when Glasgow was flourishing, it was healthy, and that was a big part of Glasgow history, basically, that 23rd Precinct. Where are we? What are we talking about there?
So we're talking about like your own, like, so obviously you've spoke, kind of spoke about like the street raves and stuff, but I was just kind of thinking maybe going into the 90s.
The first gig was local and it would be kids up in this bar who we just went crazy, and half the people in there who were older went, what the fuck's going on here? But we had a big following of people, who a big 100, 150 people, young kids, who were getting into the scene. And we started, let's go to buses. And every week there was gigs like over the country. There wasn't a lot of gigs. So everybody went to the same gig. Everybody would go to the Plaza, everybody would go to the Civic Centre in Motherwell. And one of them came up was Street Rave, and it was at the Air Pavilion. So you're thinking Air, ice cream, fucking kids,
Craig Tara,
fucking bucket and spade and all that stuff. And I still sits me with this day, driving over, there's a bit along the 70, is it 77?
I don't even drive, John, I'm rubbish.
77, I think it is. And you just come over the hill and you see the sea at Air. And I still see it, and there somebody shouts, there's the sea. I'm going, fucking great, man. This would be great. Seaside town. And you go down in this, it's, everybody knows what the pavilion is. Aye. I've seen the pavilion, the four pillars. And the bass is booming, and they've blacked all the windows out, and you just go in, and they had fucking four strobes and a smoke machine. And it's just fucking giving it.
Brilliant.
And you just get in and go, and you just get lost in it.
Aye.
Because you dress to go and dance. Everybody got there and went to the dance floor.
You weren't bothering how you looked and all that, weren't you? Know,
you maybe had a wee towel if you're sweating and stuff. And that was what it was. Every single person went, either go and get a drink and then drink, but it was like a charge, we're in, and we're away at the dance floor. And all these kids facing this DJ, whatever was going on, and religiously, and all in sync, moving and dancing and clapping and fucking cheering and whistles and
I used to
see a football match.
The way Keith Flint, he used to wear the boiler suits, so people like that, didn't you?
Well, Street Rave gave Prodigy the first Scottish gig.
Oh, did you?
Yeah, there's quite a few things. M People, Utah Saints was created basically in Street Rave because I can't remember what it was. We, Tim Utah, we used to come up and DJ, good friends with Tim. And Tim, their first ever gig was Street Rave as well.
Was there quite a lot of people then made their name there?
What's that?
Quite a lot of people kind of made their name down at Street Rave.
Well, a lot of people made their name, they were making their name here and there, but and Scottish wise, there was a few things. There would be Sweatbox and our Broadway with Tony Cochran. There would be the Slam Boys were doing stuff here and there. Metro would be gone. What's that?
Something still in the Foo Bar?
Foo Bar would be there, but I think that was... Foo Bar was... So we went to the Foo Bar after we'd done the Pavilion.
Right.
Pavilion days ended, and we went and done the Foo Bar and we'd done the Tunnel. And the Foo Bar was more a hardcore thing.
Right.
But it was an all-nighter.
Aye.
And I wasn't the biggest fan of the Foo Bar, if I'm honest.
No.
I just didn't like all-nighters and stuff.
Aye.
I just wasn't my thing. And it was the Dunhouse... But it was on a smaller level. But when Street Rave done it, I think they were called Street Rave, Salsa was the name that they were using. And we done Digweed and Pete Tong and all that stuff. So we done all that out there. We were the odd type thing, but they, a lot of hardcore. It's a big part of Scottish history, the Foo Bar.
Yeah. I know that's the only reason I've never been to the Foo Bar, and I don't think it's kind of like the way it was now. I think it's more of a kind of wee nightclub.
More commercial. Same thing what it is, but it's slightly more. Listen, that's the way of the world.
I know
Tracy and Stephen who own that, and they own that big place in Edinburgh with a big Bohemia or something it's called.
Bye,
they own that. Just part of the, I think they've got the Castle Leisure Group, and they own the thing in Falkirk.
Well,
City, they own the City Group and all that stuff. So
I think there's the Street Rave kind of thing seems to be coming back. There seems to be it's only again social media, but like you see like kind of young team all kind of starting their own illegal raves and all that again. And
yeah, so I think lockdown had a lot to do with that. I think the lockdown ravers, as they're called, they come out the other side, rebellious, and want to experience. I think lockdown was good in some aspects. It was really, really bad in other aspects. But I think there was a lot of people regained their love for dance music. Because they've seen a lot of streams.
Aye.
So the streams for me were If you'd done techno and that was difficult, because techno's designed to be listened to in a room.
Aye.
In a big room with a big sound system. Aye. Strobes, booming, and whatever. That's what it's for.
Aye.
You have to feel the energy in that. But we were doing Street Rave, which was legacy brand, which we weren't trying to reinvent the wheel. We're just doing what we do. Aye. All tunes, remixes, party stuff, and people joined, loved it. People loved it. People would sit outside there and have their TV up outside their man hut that they built, and they'd do the full thing.
Aye.
12 hours, 14 hours, whatever it was. They just joined it, and that was a good thing that people who were older clubbers had regained some of the passion they had for it, because everybody was in the same boat.
Aye.
And you had nothing else to do, so everybody was sitting there.
Aye.
And it was good because you could be involved, because there was chats and stuff, and people who you hadn't seen for years and years. You've got to remember, that's 30 years of dance music.
Aye.
People all meeting sort of in the one place.
Aye.
It's, for instance, we done the first live stream, and I done it in my room, and I done the green screen. It looked like I was at the SWG3.
Aye.
And I remember people saying, "How the fuck's he in SWG3? But I done a green screen.
Aye.
And I was sitting there, and the dog's sitting there, and fucking just the tunes, just myself. But there's like 5,000 people online chatting, like something like 50,000 comments or something. It was weird.
Aye.
As soon as I switched on, and first time I really kind of got nervous actually. Aye. Doing this. So I'm doing it live, and I'm streaming it, and I'm DJing, but I'm watching the chat.
Aye.
And it's just all these people who are in the same boat, living in fear.
Aye.
Whatever's going on, they're all around the world, because you can see it, and they all join. Yeah, but all around the world. I'm in Australia, and I'm watching Street Rave, and I'm watching this, and it was a really nice thing.
Aye.
You could feel the love in the air type for all these people who were
a lot of people were needing something, didn't they? They were needing something,
Fucking unknown. See, you look back and at some of the unhealthy thoughts that were going on, other than the healthy things, you're saying, "God, this is fucking nuts." And it, you look at that again.
See, I get released from prison, John, right into COVID. So for me, it was a weird thing, because I've said this before. See, Castle Huntley at the time, that's the open prison. Castle Huntley was probably the most open place in Scotland at that time, because we were classed as a household.
Uh-huh.
So
the full lotties?
Full lotties, right? Fuck. So we were playing football, and we were going to the gym.
We were locked up.
I wasn't the screws were like, some of the screws were getting annoyed, because they were obviously going home and getting locked up, and they were going, "I fucking shouldn't be doing that." It's the only gym in Scotland that was, so we get, it's all stoked. But we were still allowed to kind of walk about, kick about, and when I got out, I didn't really know. So I got out right in it, and it was good for me in a way, like, because it was like, just him and my
mate.
I wasn't full on, and it gave me a wee bit of time.
Because you've probably been a wee bit feeling institutionalised.
Oh,
To come out and go into the big bad world again.
Aye.
To come out for the big bad
prison-ish. Definitely.
Oh, it's probably two felt safe
worlds.
In there.
Two different worlds.
No, safe, but you know what I mean? Is that,
oh, definitely. Aye. Two different worlds.
Because I know a few people who've come out and just struggled for a bit to start with, and it was like, this is fucking odd.
Oh, aye. I know people, hard guys that are kind of well known guys and stuff that. I'll tell their family, don't come and see me for a week, because they're scared and it's fear, do you know what I mean? They don't know what to do, and it's a weird thing. But I'll take you back, obviously, to COVID. So it was, I didn't actually really see it. I seen some people inviting you to stuff and WhatsApp, do you want to come to, do you want to listen to this, and do you want to listen to that? And I never really done it, but that's amazing to see, like, that actually something was brought back. And
I think Street Dave got maybe 20,000 extra fans on what they were putting out, and people were just doing streams and putting a lot of work into them.
Mm-hmm.
And DJs you could never get were happy to be involved, because they'd fuck all else in the house. So people started doing setups like this, and buying cameras, and how did they green screen, how did this, and people started going just to make themselves busy, and people put a really good bit of effort in it, and there was a lot of good things coming out, like charity was,
aye.
I mean, I was probably involved in £250,000 worth of
brilliant,
fundraising,
man. Brilliant,
throughout the whole lot,
aye.
Not just me, there was a lot of people involved. The one, the Downing Street one raised 110 grand.
Brilliant.
That was one. But there was loads of, it was just charity. Everybody just wanted to help. Everybody wanted to look after each other. Everybody be safe, stay safe, all
there
that.
There was that wee kind of spirit of
looking at. Yeah, fucking quickly dissolved once we went back.
I know. Back to, and then you'd end it down in Street, fucking partying away, do you know what I mean? But anyway, it's so if I take you on to kind of like my era then, right? So I was like my era, like 17, 18, it was like Paul Van Dyke, to like obviously Dave Pearce, so they kind of, the trance kind of era, yeah, which we spoke about has been a really good era. What kind of gigs were you doing at that time, John?
So, Streetly was still going. Streetly would be once a year.
Aye.
But Streetly have had developed into Colours.
Oh, right, is that Colours, right?
Yeah, in 1996, Streetly have developed into Colours. Streetly, the rave, the word rave was slightly frowned upon. It wasn't the best, as in times had just changed. The big corporate sponsors had come along, the super clubs had come along, and things had changed. It went global.
Aye.
Radio 1 had jumped on board, as in their Ibiza weekend. That's when you knew it was getting really big.
With Annie Mac and all that.
Yeah, and all that stuff. Well, she would be way back then, but it would be Dave Pearce, aye, Judge Jules, aye, all that stuff. And Ibiza was blooming, but the glory years was I remember the Radio 1 weekender and the playing ATB, Till I Come and stuff.
Oh, brilliant, aye.
Now, this was at Mambo, but they didn't have any corporate stuff. They just put the speakers out, and everybody went on the beach and the rocks and just spilled. And that, for me, was glorious.
Aye.
It's way too corporate now. It's way too,
I know,
sterilised. But then it was phenomenal. And I loved Ibiza then. The music was healthy. You had, I'd say, all the big tunes. I call them Saturday night tunes.
Aye.
Stardust, fucking all, aye, this thing. All the defecty stuff, all this. But the trance thing was really healthy.
Aye.
Really healthy and...
I think that kind of, obviously you'll know better than me, but I think that kind of built the foundations, like Tiesto and people like that, to go on to be the superstar DJ, I think.
Well, Tiesto was the guy for me that changed it all.
Aye.
So Tiesto was the first guy to do the stadiums.
Aye.
First guy to do the big stages. Aye,
brilliant.
He'd done that. I think he'd done the Elements Tour, I think it was called. So you had waterfalls and showers, and then they had the fire and... Oh, that's so.
I kind of brought in a lot of.
He was first.
Aye.
He was first. I think he sold the big stadium out in Amsterdam 2 days in a row. He sold it, but it was him and his team that really, really changed it. They took it from clubs, they took it from raves, whatever it was, and they took it to stadiums and they made it a spectacle.
Aye.
With the big pyrotechnics, the whole. That was Tiesto that changed it.
So, because obviously I remember watching an Annie Mac program, right? And obviously there was loads of people on it. And, I don't know if it was Paul Oldenfold or Pete Tom, one of them anyway, was going to the airport and he says he'd been asked, he says, basically, we went to Ibiza every year, he says, but this year I got a phone call for whatever club, where it was, Space or whatever, do you want to do 2 weeks resident in here? And he was like, aye, and we'll get you a plane and all. He went, that never happened before. He went, like, I was like, aye. He says, I end up turning up and I thought I was this big fucking superstar DJ, and we go there and there was fucking loads and we were all getting private jets. He says, yeah. I think that, it's, I can't remember what year that was, John, but that's...
The thing about when it changed, it became very corporate, very money-orientated, it sucked a lot of the life.
Started ruining it, didn't I know?
It works in some aspects, you get bigger, more professional shows, and there's some fantastic shows that you've been at and played at. And, but then it becomes really...
Is the atmosphere as good?
But yeah, don't get me wrong, back then it was still phenomenal. You had the Arches was coming to speak as well.
Aye.
You had all that stuff, and you had healthy clubs in there, so you'd have, there was Colours inside out, there would be Death Disco, and there would have been like Pressure,
aye.
Slam, I don't know, Pressure it was called at the time.
Was there not a big one in your way, Livingston?
There was Room at the Top.
Room at the Top.
But you had all these, each weekend would have 2,500, 3,000
right,
different punters, aye, aye, in the Arches,
aye,
and there are things in between. I think they had Octopussy and stuff and that, but it was so healthy.
Aye.
Queue right round the door, and just absolutely amazing times.
Aye.
That I can't tell you how good that the Arches was then.
What do you think killed that then? What do you think? Can I
still had its society, phones, drugs?
No.
Still was the greatest club ever for me when it was closing.
The Arches?
I've seen it, yeah, the Arches.
Is it reopened?
Yeah, it was opened for a pilot scheme. I think it was called New World, it was called.
Aye.
Difficult. I've seen some good things about it. I've seen some things that just didn't sit right with me, but that's just me being a grumpy old bastard here.
Got to be true to yourself as well, John.
The spirit of the dance floor was there in some things, and some things are just like, holy fuck.
It's a lot of... I see it when I go, and I don't go anywhere, by the way. Like, I see some of my pals will send me videos. SWG3 looks quite good. That looks as if there's atmosphere there. But there seems to be a lot of... The young man's just really, really kind of on their looks and the way they...
Yeah, that's what I said earlier. It's more about image now than music.
Definitely, aye.
There's things they'll sell out in an instant, but I'll go and I've seen some of these parties. And, dare I say it, some of these DJs are substandard. I'm not trying to knock anybody for being, but they're given a platform by the promoters who probably don't vet them. Probably don't. They don't program the night sometimes properly.
Aye.
They'll go for 115 BPMs to 150. It's just fucking wild. So I'm watching some.
just mental.
And these DJs, some of the DJs, don't listen. There's some great DJs out there. Aye. Some great music. There's some great clubs. But there's a huge element of what happens now is Instagram led.
How many
followers? As fashion led, as the people coming into the scene that are in it for the wrong reason. And they're not in it for to be DJs to play music. They're in it because they might get a bit of fame out of this. Or their Instagram, they'll create a following there and some sitting going, and they're fucking horseshit. They're fucking bollocks. And it's quite difficult to sit and watch you go. My whole aspect, right, so see if they want to do that, right? That's fine. Charge on. And you can work hard and get good. You can work hard and get good. And I've no issues with that. But some of them are given real platforms to play on. And I really feel that it's actually the punter who's been cheated. Because the punter is not getting the experience that I had. That where I would stand there and go with a DJ, I would trust them. And I knew the DJ would deliver a journey, if that's...
No, cliche. Definitely.
They would deliver it. It would be programmed properly. It would be the warm-up. It would be the middle. And they would just blow it. And anybody who experienced those sort of journeys, they can still get them. There's still there. Some DJs are really good. And the music's really good, as I said. But there's a lot of people are being cheated of the dance floor experience that I had. And I feel for them. I hope it changes. I don't know if it will. It's quite disheartening to see it sometimes. But that's the way the world. I've had my time. It's time for these kids to come on and take control. Absolutely, we've lived our best year. We've had it. We don't get me wrong. We're still doing some good stuff, and I'm still enjoying DJing. But we're not trying to reinvent the wheel now.
No, and we're, I think, the like, just have your name, John. We'll go into that later. But just, you've got a kind of big name in the DJ world in Scotland. Do you know what I mean? And you'll always attract people. But as you say, I think when you're like, I watched I liked Avicii, right? I loved Avicii, and I watched his program, and I felt so sorry for him, like, just the way. And you look at him, and you just think that guy's living life to the best. He's living life, and you don't see what's happening behind the scenes. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? And I suppose it's just like when you speak to football players and actors. We've had all types of people in here, and you always think. And I think it could be social media that you're like flicking through it, and you think your world's shit, because there's, when that's not the real projection, do you know what I mean? It's so false, do you know what I mean?
Avicii had a great start, probably, but then he was running into the ground.
Aye. And that's the corporate thing, isn't it? Like,
well, it comes to his management and stuff in the end. I think I heard there was a huge management deal in favour of the management. For that, I could be wrong. It could be hearsay. But I seen him. I seen him being bundled into a van, straight in DJ for an hour next and away. I think he'd done something like 280 gigs in a year.
You're going, fucking hell.
The fuck can you do that?
That's burning out.
And I think that's why he drunk. And I don't think he was a big drinker, but you think he'd to cope with the nerves. You've got to remember, these kids have been thrust into the limelight and having to cope with this. Ours was a slow thing. Aye. Right, when you came through the ranks and stuff, and I'm listening, fucking never reached any of that sort of heights. But you could deal with, if you've done 5, 10, 15, 20 years, then you can deal with society.
Aye.
And the pressures of it. But Avicii came from nowhere.
I know.
As a producer, And then obviously they seen there was money in DJing and threw him into the DJing. And for him to go up to be the guy that they're there to see, the pressure must be immense for an experienced DJ. But fucking this kid,
I know,
was being thrown in. And that's why I believe they started drinking heavy and stuff, and that's where he suffered. And then obviously depression, I mean, probably sets in on the back of that.
Aye. You're
sitting there going, oh, how could you fucking millionaire, and you've got the world at your feet. You've got different pressures.
Aye, your life's shit still. It doesn't mean, like, we all know that money doesn't, but we'd all love to have money and have, but that certainly doesn't buy happiness and joy, do you know what I mean?
Be careful what you wish for sometimes.
Aye.
I've seen a lot of the newer kids coming through and they get a hit and push through, and I can see them struggling.
Mm-hmm.
Something to deal with the touring schedule. Aye. And being away from home. Basically, simple stuff. It's nice to go back and...
I know.
Stuff.
Well, we had Andy Henderson on here, who was in the Daikinis. I don't know if you remember them. But Andy said, like, the same thing, we were young boys. He said, we were doing partying, we were out enjoying that. He says, he pumped us right up. He went, they were going to be the next thing. And says, and we needed Radio 1 to take his own. He says, and for whatever reason, they never. But they'd signed a contract. I don't know what it was, but it was like a 3-album deal or whatever. And when Sony, it was a company that was linked to Sony, but when they released them, they still kept the contract. So Elton John was about to take him on their label, but he couldn't, because they wouldn't release. And you're like, why would you do that if you don't want them?
Yeah, so they probably paid them in advance as well, probably. I don't really know how it all works or something, but... It's a fucking bad world.
It's sad, isn't it? Like, it's just cruel, man, isn't it? Like, crushing the hopes of, like, 4 or 5 young boys when you don't need to, like...
Yeah, but that comes down to probably at the start where you go, what deal are you wanting here?
I know.
Kind of naivety and...
Is that something that you would ever look into, like, even trying to help the younger DJs, even create
a... So I've helped quite a few.
I've
helped quite a few to start with.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I looked after quite a few. It was never management or anything. I just helped. I was a sort of mentor for a few. Hannah Lane.
Aye.
I helped Hannah a wee bit at the start. Helped get her.
She's brilliant, man, Hannah Lane.
Yeah, I helped her get her first couple of tracks, I think, signed different places. And yeah, just gave her advice. Just keep an eye on it. That was it. And then Hannah moved on. Just basically, and then she got in touch with her new manager. New manager's brilliant.
Aye.
He's pretty good. He's done a fucking phenomenal job there. Absolutely phenomenal.
I saw it doing guys like yourself and that have kind of went through the whole, because it's moved so much. It's a scene that probably isn't like any other, like in the way that how massive the shifts are and how... So to have people like yourself who's experienced from the start to now is probably priceless for a lot of people.
It'd be nice if I was a young coming through and
I knew what to do.
You've got to remember, there's nothing happening. We were the first to do what we were doing type thing.
No, you have created the path.
Yeah, but there was no rule book then. There was no experience, so somebody couldn't come and say to you, well, here's what you should be doing DJ-wise, because we didn't fucking know.
It was like kind of learning from mistakes and stuff.
Yeah, there was no room. We were even putting on events, like the fun, crazy times that, like, Ricky and Jamsey and all that stuff, that Dumby Street, they was just wild. What they were just fucking... I had an airport.
Did you?
Prestwick Airport.
That's right, aye.
I had Prestwick Airport. How the fuck do you get an airport? I've got an airport. Kidding on. So it's a terminal building where you check in.
Aye.
Done 6 parties there.
Aye. It's crazy.
Prodigy, M people, fucking what? TTF, all this shit. So
even look at Keith Flint. I mean, I loved the Prodigy. They were one of my favourites. And when you, like, obviously, I think with Keith Flint had a lot of mental health problems, and I mean that music, that genius kind of thing seems to affect a lot of people in different ways. But I think the music scene you see quite a lot with people who are very talented, and then they kind of cope with, I don't know if it's growing up or just kind of cope with life in general. So maybe they just see society for what it is or whatever. I don't know.
It's odd. Some people take it like a duck to water, and some people just fold.
Aye.
There's a lot of pressures. There's a lot of non-ice things in the dance scene.
Aye.
And there's a lot of hard work to get to get good.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I've seen people come along through all the who didn't work hard and faked it and got where they are. And
you aye.
Go, fucking imposter or whatever.
Aye.
But a lot of people who have worked hard, and there's a lot of behind the scenes things. It's fucking more professional than it's ever been. Whether that's a good thing or a bad thing, I don't know. But I know all these said the LF system
aye.
As I've helped Connor, I taught Connor how to DJ when he was a 14-year-old guy. But I've seen the guys get their number one
aye.
8 weeks, 8 weeks, 10 weeks.
Aye.
And they beat Calvin Harris's record. And these two wee guys look at me, just fucking great wee guys.
And they
genuinely
they
fucking nice guys. And all these coming through, aye. The Scottish guys that are coming through, the young team.
Aye.
Young Christian Rogers is coming through. And they've all been thrust into a different sort of mm-hmm. limelight, whereas you could make or break.
Aye.
So I know Hannah suffered really badly aye. With nerves and stuff mm-hmm. beforehand. I know she really did.
And it's that thing, John, where, do you know, sorry for butting in, but it's that thing where we get is people who don't watch, people who aren't the DJs and stuff, watch that and go, that's the best job in the world, right?
Yeah.
But we don't see, again, we just only see you guys, Gina's having an amazing time. We don't see what your backstory.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? And the pressures that yous have got, you don't see
yeah.
it.
Yeah, well, I mean, not much compared to what the young guys are going now. They're travelling the world.
I know.
I've done a good bit of travelling with DJing, but they're touring
America.
Because
Europe's quite a big scene, isn't it? Europe's huge.
Australia, America, they're just touring the world.
Aye.
Sean, as an LF system, they're fucking everywhere.
Aye.
And I know it takes its toll on them. I know they come back and they're tired and they miss their families and stuff, and I know probably Hannah does the same.
Aye.
I
think having just you probably don't even know how invaluable you are to them then, John, really.
I just sort of helped them with advice and that at the start, and Hannah was part of a team that we had, and I was just sort of guiding them a wee bit. They still made all their decisions in the end. It was only advice and that stuff, and it was great to see them develop into something great, but see, Hannah's fucking smashing it.
She's brilliant, but it's so different, right? But you can make that kind of example where when I went to prison, I didn't have a fucking clue. Like, I was so out of depth. It was wild. It was mad. It was
how
totally
bad
different.
Was it?
When I went to Pullman, it was fucking really, really bad. Pullman was.
I'd done DJ lessons at Pullman.
Aye. What did you? I mean. Because you're likeable, John, because you're a nice guy, you probably would have been all right, right?
They were fine. Sorry, they've done them in sections.
Aye.
Am I right in saying the sex offenders would be treated different?
Aye, they don't get... Well, they get there in a different hall, so they don't...
Yeah, so I've done two sections aye. And that was that. Yeah, unfortunately, that's the way they were
I know.
There.
Aye. That's the way they
judging
the
anybody,
are.
Absolutely no judging.
No, it's anybody. The way all the jails splat.
But I... It seemed when it was fine when I was there. Aye. They were having a good time. They were happy to see
what,
DJ.
What year was it, John? Do you know? Can you remember?
Sorry, what?
What year?
No idea.
Don't
mate.
Know.
No idea.
Not on you go because it was
part of 15 years anyway ago.
Right.
Probably. As my mate who's a DJ says, can you come down and show these kids how to?
Aye.
I think they're obviously trying to put stuff aye. On so that see. Listen, here's a life outside, or you can go and do aye. This. And DJing wasn't really sought after at the time.
Aye.
But it went down with it. Decks and all that stuff and showed them. I think young Calvin Logue.
Aye.
Dunbar Linney.
Aye, no long ago.
Aye. Young Calvin right. done aye. So
I mean, listen, it's like we don't need more. People have got their idea of prison, right? And people that go hard line and all that and give them nothing, fine. But you can't demonise them when they come out and do the same thing then. If you're not willing to put the rehabilitation in, then you can't expect people to change. Do you know what I mean? Because society and poverty and this is the issues that are causing these boys to be what they are or girls. It's no, they don't grow up when they're 3-year-old and go, I want to be a big fucking drug dealer.
I tried to explain this to many a person mm-hmm. who judge people.
Aye.
And they go, they're doing that, it's fucking scumbag. You're like, no, aye. There's something behind that.
Aye.
So they're either uneducated or they've come from a family background that's done that or there's something else. And they didn't understand it. He says, you just count yourself lucky
mm-hmm.
that you come for a safe home, you're reasonably well looked after and all that sort of thing.
Definitely.
But you go, these kids have maybe grown up and fuck all.
Aye.
And they've went down a bad path. It's aye. Absolutely toxic. Yeah, it can put you in a bad mood for the fucking day.
Aye, definitely.
I used to went off of, I did get involved in a lot of arguments with fucking arguing with strangers, like, what the fuck are you doing yourself, you fucking idiot?
And Twitter, like,
fucking I know. See, if he was here, I'd fucking go to his door, you're like, oh, fucking,
I know.
Just stupid, just, aye. And they're not giving a fuck.
No.
You've ruined your fucking day, because you're not. So I took a really big step back for social media, and I use it just I like a laugh. Aye. I like a laugh on it. Aye. It used to be a good laugh, and I would used to have a fucking load of bangers on my page. Men. And I would light the touch paper.
Aye.
There they go. Throw in the fucking sticky dynamite, and they would fucking come out the water, out the walls. And I had a great laugh watching them.
Aye.
But people have to separate themselves with social media.
Definitely.
Facebook, I keep saying this to a guy called Neil Hood, if Neil's fucking there. Facebook isn't real.
Aye.
It's no real, mate.
Aye.
None of it's fucking real. But people want to live their life on it.
I know.
They fucking have got mates and stuff. They'll put everything personal up and you got that. And that's just no me.
Definitely.
If you want to do that, it's your page, not your sellout. But there's pitfalls at the back of that. Be careful.
Massive. I don't use it either. I use it for like the podcast and stuff like that. I don't put any of my own kind of personal stuff on it. And that's for the reasons. I easily can get scrolling and going, fucking hell, I need to do this and I need to, and it can, you start procrastinating because you're looking at other people's fake lives, do you know what I mean? And I think it's designed to do that, to be honest. I think it's designed to kind of keep us that
designed
way.
Designed for hate.
Aye.
It's designed to split people up. It's designed for division.
Definitely.
It's fucking horrible. Things that people get away with, you sit and go, oh, they're Tory, they're Labour. They're Trump, they're fucking that. You know what I mean? It all comes down to splitting. Or they're vax, or they're anti-vax, or they're fucking, they're conspiracy. And it's all split.
Aye.
And they get into these groups, and that's a pet hate of mine. It's people, grifters.
Aye.
Grifters who make a fucking living or rip people.
Aye.
And get them to, they just say stuff because it creates a popularity, or they're mm-hmm. running a fucking patron page.
Patron.
Aye. And oh, there's a guy, I seen it, he's deleted me from his fucking page. He's a fucking banger. I don't care what fucking say about it. But he's got all these pages.
Aye.
Conspiracy pages. He's got 6, 7, 8, 9 fucking of them. Save this fucking. And then at the bottom of it, it's talking about like, keep cash. And you go, get to the bottom and you go, you've just asked people to pay your fucking monthly money to that thing there. But I seen him as a grifter.
Aye.
Paying people, getting people who are looking for a bit of, looking for answers.
I know.
And believing certain things. And that's fine for everybody, mm-hmm. but people believing in certain things, and these people come along, mm-hmm. they go,
oh, if you could see, if you could, like, I've been doing it, you could do the rabbit hole. What I found out, you could do the rabbit hole, you listen to all these crazy, you watch, blah, blah, blah. But see, when you get to the end, you just see the elite people who are actually running that actual elite. It doesn't matter what happens in our world.
Yeah.
If they win, they win.
They're untouchable.
Aye, they whoever wins the war in Russia, whoever wins the war there, they win. Like, they've got both sides. They cover both sides. Yeah. And once you realise that, you do need to look at yourself and go, I can't fix any of that. You just need to go on with it. But I get why people like conspiracy theory, but David Icke's the same. David Icke talks about, oh, this, and then at the bottom it's like, here, buy this, and it's like, I've got a t-shirt with a lizard on it for 50 quid, and you're like, what? Do you know what I mean? It's like, you're talking about all these people and how they're stealing money. And
they all do it, and it's quite difficult to. Russell Brand's the same.
Aye,
Russell Brand's meant to be that posh guy.
I know.
That fucking thing with you to do.
And I like Russell Brand, and all the way he talks that.
Yeah, because he says things you want to hear.
I know.
And what you believe in. And he's captured that. He's I'm going to do this and say this. And he wasn't like that before.
I know.
I see him as a grifter.
Aye.
People say, oh, he's only telling the truth. He's not telling the truth. He's just saying what's available.
Aye.
It's all online. He's not.
Andrew Tate, I know. Andrew Tate, he talks about this, do that. And like, aye. But see for people that are in social deprivation and yeah. they're so unaware of what you're talking about. Yeah. They've not got the awareness to do what you're saying. Like you say, do this and do that and be disciplined. But these people don't know any of these things. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. They've never been taught any of it. So where did they start? Show them. And it's already saying that to people that have got money. And ugh, I know you could go
Let's
in
go
for
back
those.
To
but
music.
I know you could go in for those.
Fuck the grifters.
I know, fuck them. I know. So just as we're kind of coming up to then, John, what free in the future, what's coming up for you?
During lockdown, I created a few brands, myself and Kilky. We have Electric Dreams.
I've seen that, but it looks
so Electric Dreams is something we created. And it's me and Michael back-to-back for decks. And we play old school,
aye.
New school, we pay a bit. We're no reinventing the wheel. It's a party. Because the people that are coming to our gigs are 30 plus.
Aye.
They're out to have a party. They don't go out that much. And they're just enjoying life again. Aye. But we got a lot of young kids who want to come through and experience what we experienced. Because they all look back and they go, their brother, big brother and sisters or their mums and dads just tell them, or fucking grannies and that. Fucking. I've told them about these glory years. And we talk about them all misty-eyed and great. So they come and try and experience. And we also have a thing called Guilty Pleasures.
Aye, I've seen
Guilty
that.
Guilty Pleasures is probably the best thing a day.
Aye.
It's anything, it's 70s, 80s, fucking for AC/DC to Barney Man, a lot of disco.
Aye, love AC/DC.
And it's great. And it's all edited up and it's all mixed. And it's a phenomenal, we have such a good crowd that come here and get fucking wrecked and fucking sing their heart out. It's a total escapism.
Aye.
For 6 hours, we play back to back and we just.
So where is this? Where is it, John?
So they're at the Guilty Pleasures at the Radisson Red. Electric Dreams at the Radisson Red, but we
that
take
was that.
Right,
was there.
Yeah,
aye.
We take that to the Sky Bar, and then we go on the road with Electric Dreams and that as well. We've also got a thing called Big Shiny Disco Brunch.
Aye.
She's got drag queens and singers and. And that's more disco house, vocal house. And they're really good.
Aye.
They sell out in a minute.
Aye.
We're putting them on sale and they're selling it straight.
Where can we fight, obviously, for people? Where can we fight?
Everywhere, mate. Aye. Really, they're local to me. So we do the welfare in Foltis.
Aye.
Sounds a bit stupid and folk laugh, but it's one of the best parties.
Aye.
It's 300 people in there who go absolutely apeshit, who love a bit of disco house, vocal house, some Ibiza. And it's a great, it's just a party.
Aye.
We do a rumba up at the V&A Museum in Dundee. We're actually in the museum.
Aye.
So we've got a
week in the museum, aye.
In the museum, aye. We're weighing up there, the rumba. And that's great. And we have Radisson. We do a lot of stuff with the Radisson.
Aye. I've seen that a lot.
We've also got some of DJs still part of the street they've set up as well. The street they've got that, the Pavilion Festival coming up, which was phenomenal last year.
Aye.
One of the best sets and the most emotional sets I've done in a long time.
You're doing it exactly. Obviously, Mallorca Lee's just died there, and he was a big kind of, he was a friend of yours, wasn't he?
That's a sore one.
I know.
That's a sore one, Mal.
He's a legend, isn't he? Brian actually sent me a video of him in I don't know where it was, but it was public domain, and he sent me the video, and it was when he was jumping about on his tables.
So Mallorca was probably one of the best frontmen for a dance act.
Oh, aye.
He's up there, he's just done his thing. It's really odd, Mallorca, because a very nice, sort of quiet, absolutely family man.
Mm-hmm.
Family, true. He's fucking. He's missing his two kids. But underneath, very, very, very sensitive guy, believe it or not.
Aye,
very sensitive, very. Didn't he like get involved in anything that would fuck his mind up for the day or something? He was just wanted an easy life and loved his music and very talented.
Aye.
Very talented. So, didn't like any hassle on that. He stayed at, didn't like, stayed away from that. And he's such a big character, man. I just remember as being a big, funny laugh. Every time I fucking, we spoke on the phone or something, he's just fucking taking the piss. Because I've done a podcast with him.
Aye.
And I sat with him and we had a fucking laugh for 2.5 hours. And it's good was reminiscing with a guy who's been there as well in the scene and at the times. Because I think the first time I seen him was I think we had Preswick Airport doing one of your dances. I think he broke in the back door. I think they kicked the door in. I think that's a great story. fucking, he's up, big Ricky. I want a fucking gig here. I want a gig with you. And fucking, that was it. And I never had much to do with my Lorca then.
Aye.
Because we were past, there was a lot of things, DJs, you knew everybody. Aye. And but you were never in the same thing with him because they were always DJing in different parts and he was doing his thing. And Ultrasonic, that wasn't really my thing.
Aye.
That scene wasn't really my thing. I was doing house music and stuff and that. And he always laughs. He used to always go, "Oh, we were playing fucking Annihilate Rhythm or whatever it's called, and you're playing fucking M People, yeah, kind of that fucking flowery stuff." And I just laughing. So, he always slags me for that. But what a fucking miss, man. I can't believe that I'll never see him again. I can't believe that because I've Through his illness, it was fucking so quick.
I know.
It was fucking difficult. It was really difficult. I know a lot of people who are fucking, we're all broken hearted about it. Because he's such a big character.
No,
for his hashtag show, to his paintings, to his albums, to his music, to his fucking Ultrasonic, to everything. There's so much that he brought. Aye. He was super talented. But I just knew him as fucking Big Mama, mate.
Aye.
So...
I know. No, listen, he's got a bit of a massive loss to a lot of people, and you can only just, I mean, Public Domain were brilliant. I grew up with Ultrasonic. I loved Ultrasonic, do you know what I mean? They were one of my favourites.
Ultrasonic's where I remember him.
Aye.
Yeah.
See, I didn't actually know, like, as I say, I missed all that era, and I missed Resurrection. Yeah. I never got to see Resurrection, and that's obviously, I know they'd done one in there, but I've seen the videos. I've actually looked up the videos and looked up the old Resurrection videos and stuff. Do you know what I mean? And Annihilating Rhythm and all that. Like, I love it. Do you know what I mean?
I told him, I says, I think they're fucking
I know. Brian used to say to me, I know, I'm not saying
that's
that
fucking dog shit. You're playing my, and fucking sitting there and he got that. I thought you were from New York. What do you mean? I just heard the boy talking the microphone fucking with this accent and I slag him all the time. There's a few of the MCs, a fucking MC Corrupt, I used to go fucking always that because I thought he was from London. It's all right. So I used to slag my work a bit fucking talking about in the hood and all that stuff. But
I know.
I had a good relationship with Mal. Yeah, fucking sad day.
I know.
When we fucking started, I'll fucking.
I know.
Yeah, big miss. Big personality.
Aye.
And gets all, deserves all the plaudits he gets. He built that.
I know. So just as we're coming up, John, I always give like the guest just the last wee message, like, and I always try and get it to maybe people that. So you, a lot of people probably watch this that are into dance music and stuff, and you'll get some people that have maybe kind of an addiction, whatever, and recovery. And I always try and get the wee message just to these people that are sitting there. So just give you the last message, John. Just if you can, a wee message for them to there. That's
life is bollocks. Life is bollocks. I don't know where we go with fucking with politics and all that stuff. We're not going to see any change.
No.
No matter if Labour gets in.
I know.
Right? I've supported Labour all my days, right? Keir Starmer's a bellend.
Jeremy Corbyn was the man for change for me. I know.
I was hoping. It was different for the rest. People slept him for fucking ever. But I was hoping he was saying he got to be the change. It's pretty bleak. Mm-hmm. But see if he just. In my book, see if you just do your own thing.
Mm-hmm.
Just work hard. Believe in yourself. It's all fucking cliche stuff.
But self-belief's massive.
I never believed myself. I still fucking don't. Mm-hmm. Suffer from imposter syndrome.
Aye.
Sitting going like, you'll never do that.
Mm-hmm.
People are not going to come. People don't like you. People don't.
Mm-hmm.
Self-doubt is quite difficult to deal with. So, see if you can get over that. And if you've actually got a talent, fucking... My old mates. There was a thing. See, when I left school, I never get any help for parents or anything because that was you got get a job. We need the dig money.
Mm-hmm.
See if you have a talent, and you see something you really like. See if you can get back into people or somebody to support you to school and go straight. I wish I'd done music production earlier. I wish I'd been a sound engineer earlier. I wish I'd done all that earlier.
Because
I've had my time. Still doing stuff, but I've had my time. And I have fucking led a great life in dance music and stuff. I've loved it every fucking minute. It's been some fucking pitfalls, obviously, but you absolutely believe in yourself. And people, nice if people see something in somebody,
aye,
and they back them.
Definitely.
Because I say it to my nieces and nephews, what do you like?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, no, what do you like? I said, well, let's get something that you really like,
aye,
and we'll help you and we'll try and
nurture it.
Mm-hmm. I said to my niece, you might be a DJ. She went, no. I says, you do know what? I could probably
make you
open some nice doors here for you and help you and fucking make you a decent edit. Not interested.
Aye. What age is she? 14, 15.
14.
Oh, I know you want to get this about the age you want her in.
But I want her to do something that she's happy with.
I know.
Same with my nephew, same with my other niece and that. So
of course.
I want everybody to be happy.
I used to say, see, with the prison system, I used to say the self-belief in the prison system and the self-doubt is covered up and masked by anger, violence and stuff like that. And it's people that don't know how to do anything that go, I'm good at that. I'm good at fighting. I'm good at that. I can do that. And it's trying to teach, look at Jimmy Boyle and that. And we had David Heyman on this, on the show, and he went into the special unit in Berlin, where it's supposed to be the worst prisoners, the worst of the worst. And he says that we had them acting, we had them singing, we had them like writing poetry. He says that the amount of talent that was there, everybody's got talent.
Yeah.
It's just trying to get it out, John, isn't it?
That's
it's
exactly what I'm trying to say there. If you've got a talent or a passion, then
find
if
it.
You see it in somebody, then help them get it out.
No,
always, I know, access to a lot of kids or whatever. I say, what do you like?
Mm-hmm.
What do you want to do?
Don't know.
What do you want to do? I don't know. I'm just got to get a job. He's like, but see if there's another option. See, you're into football or you're into music or you're into fucking whatever.
Aye.
Because I was fortunate I'd done a job that I loved.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't work.
Aye.
DJing isn't work.
I know.
If you love it, sometimes to go and do these parties where the connection between the DJ and the crowd is indescribable. Having the time of your life with these people and you have it in your you have the control on it and it's fucking something else. And to play music that you love, to see people enjoy what you do is a pretty special fucking thing. So if you have a passion,
aye,
and you have a job, it's no work.
No.
It's no work if you get it, mate.
Aye. No, definitely. I agree with you so much, John. But listen, John, thank you very much for coming on. It's been absolutely brilliant having you on.
You see me sliver and piss here.
Brilliant. Thank you.
Love you, Brian.